You're listening to Hillbilly Solid here on 91.3. I'm your host, Silas House. I thank you for being here with us. All the artists we're playing are featured in the new best-selling book, Woman, Walk the Line. And we're lucky to have the person responsible for that book with us today. Holly Gleason is a music critic, professor, artist development consultant, and as a songwriter under the name Lady Goodman, she's written chart-topping hits. Her work has appeared in Rolling Stone, the Los Angeles Times, the New York Times, Cream, Spin, Musician, Relix, American Songwriter, Paste, many, many others, too many to list here. She was on the road with Neil Young at the age of 20. She was the author of Steve Earle and Patti Loveless's first national magazine profiles. She's been on the front lines of country, roots, and American music since she was 19 years old. She even contributed liner notes to the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band's Will the Circle Be Unbroken Volume 2. She's also a graduate of the MFA in Creative Writing Program at Spalding University. Most importantly for us today, she's the editor of the anthology we've been celebrating throughout our episode. It's called Woman Walk the Line, How the Women of Country Music Changed Our Lives, and it features 27 women writers of different ages, races, occupations, orientations, and perspectives, reflecting on the one artist who really had an impact on their lives. And it's a sweeping view from Mabel Carter to Kacey Musgraves, from Dolly Parton to Taylor Swift, Patti Loveless to Katie Lang, Roseanne Cash to Wanda Jackson. Woman Walk the Line is a fascinating look at how these women shaped country music and all of our lives. Welcome to the show, Holly Gleason. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Silas. I am so excited to be here with you.
Well, we're glad to have you. What do you want our listeners out there to know about this book?
I think that when I set out to do this book, I wanted people to realize how powerful music can be in your life and the kind of differences it can make if you let it. And I also wanted to make sure a lot of women artists in country music aren't getting lost in the internet age. So the two things came together. And I wanted to make sure some great women writers that I know, their voices got sort of preserved for time as well.
Well, the title comes from an Emmy Lou Harris song, right?
It sure does. From The Ballad of Sally Rose.
Oh, God, that's such a great album. Tell us about choosing that title.
When I was in college, The Ballad of Sally Rose came out, and it was, I guess, a country opera, rock opera, about a girl singer who loses her mentor, is forced to carry on alone in the world, and ends up becoming a huge star. So metaphorically, I love the album, and this particular song is the one where she's venturing into the world, and she's saying, I'm going to stand on my own two feet.
When you approached people about being in the book, did you give them, what was your direction for them?
It was really low-tech and kind of unscientific. I would call people up or IM them on the internet and say, you know, who was the woman country artist who changed everything?
Mm-hmm.
When you look at your life and you look at the music you listen to and the places where you really leaned either into it or onto it in some of the cases, who were those artists? And it was amazing. Once people got past their favorite, I think I only had one person that I talked to that didn't have a timing issue say, you know what, I just don't have one. And there were probably six or seven more people that we just couldn't make the timing work. And then they would also come to me with some great ideas. Alice Randall, I had called about one artist, and she said, you know, I just got done doing some work for Ken Burns and Lil Hardin. And I said, but she's a jazz piano player. And she said, she played the piano on Blue Yodel Number 9. I had no idea. So there was some discovery for me, too, with the book.
Well, I mentioned in your intro people featured in the book and writers in the book, like Mabel Carter, Kacey Musgraves, Dolly Parton, Taylor Swift, Roseanne Cash, Wanda Jackson. The list just goes on and on. But you mentioned Alice Randall there. You also have people like the executive editor of People magazine. And then you have food activist Allie Burlow, whom I love, her work. and even people like Taylor Swift. So how in the world did you wrangle such a large cast of people?
I've spent my life collecting people, you know, never with an agenda, just, oh, you're interesting, or, oh, you're funny, or you're smart, or you're kind. So when I started really thinking about who were the women I wanted to be written about, I tried to think about who are the voices that deserve perfect binding that may never get it. Now, Holly George Warren and Alice Randall have both published a bunch of books, so they're a different category. But Ronnie Lundy from Louisville, she hasn't written about music in 30 years, and I think she's one of the best music writers ever.
Yes, she is.
And she was out promoting Vittles at the time. I would get these crazy text messages with her Hazel Dickens or her Hazel and Alice records, riding shotgun in her car as she was doing her book tour, going, I promise it's coming, or riding side by side with Inspiration. A couple other things. I wanted to make sure that it was a big room, so I wanted young writers. I don't know if I'm allowed to say how old Ronnie is, but she's definitely got an ARP card. I wanted to have black women. I wanted to have Candia Crazy Horse is a Native American. Cynthia Sands is actually Latina. I wanted to have people from a lot of different occupations, not just music critics. I wanted to have gay people, transgendered people, married people, mommies. You know, when Ann Powers, because she was finishing Good Booty, her book, couldn't do Taylor Swift for me, I went straight to Elisa Gardner, who had just stepped down at USA Today, because she's also a very good critic, but she's a mom, and she's raising a daughter. And I thought, that's a really interesting prism to consider this artist through, because she's truly an artist, but then she's also kind of a role model for young girls.
Holly, over the last year or so, it seems to me as if misogyny has been worse than ever. And we've seen that behavior validated, shall we say, by the nation at large. With that in mind, do you think a book like this, you know, that's women writing about women, do you think that has a particular relevance for us right now?
It's funny. When I started the book, the famous country radio tomatoes controversy hadn't started, you know, where women artists were called the tomatoes in the salad. And it feels like a snowball, Silas. Instead of moving towards better, I think we're moving towards more denial and a little bit more almost permissiveness to act like that.
Right.
You know, I grew up in a music industry where I worked really hard to either come across as a very young girl or one of the boys, just so it was never an issue. And I got sexually harassed very badly by an editor at Spin Magazine. So even when you work that hard to not make it an issue, it can be an issue. And one of the things about the book, when Exene Cervenka from the punk band X read it, you know, she said, it's country girls, it's city girls, but really, it's everybody. And my copy editor, not the universities, but I had a copy editor that worked with me, he was a punk icon in South Florida. Peter Buck from REM used to guitar tech for him sometimes. And he called me after he read the book, and he said, wow, you know, I hear women talking about this stuff all the time, but when you see it as just a confessional narrative, you realize how much worse it is than you want to believe. And this is an evolved man, by the way. So for him to say that, I can only imagine.
You touched on this. You know, I hear people talk a lot lately about how country radio just won't hardly play women. What are your thoughts on that? Can you expand a little bit on that? Because that's really interesting.
Well, I think one of the things that when you pull out and consider radio, they're really in the business of selling advertising. And music is the thing that fetches the listeners, and then they want to hold it. I think as the radio chains have gotten larger and larger, and they're looking to save money, where you used to have programmers that were really able to listen and take chances on records and go, you know, I believe in this, now you may have somebody programming 15 radio stations. And they just go off research, they don't want to lose their job, and they just go for what they know works. So that sort of created a one-stop shopping thing where more of the same is more of the same. So it's a lot of theoretically hot guys singing about partying and trucks and girls, and since girls like hot guys, they'll be fine. Or they're being objectified and they'll like it. And I was talking to Angelina Presley, and she said, you know, what makes me sad is for all the little girls where I'm from, and she's from Beauty, Kentucky, she said, you know, their daddies may not have the money to go to get a SiriusXM premium subscription. And so that's all they get to hear on their radio. And, you know, I think that there's a lot of stuff boiling under the surface where people are starting to really go, maybe we do have a problem. Now I think the challenge is going to be to see more women come through and break through that aren't just working, say, the Carrie Underwood or the Miranda Lambert model. When I started covering country music, you had everything from K.T. Oslin, Emmylou Harris, Roseanne Cash, the Judds, Gail Davies, Lacey J. Dalton, who was kind of an outlaw, all very singular women. And in the 90s, it was even more diverse. It was Trisha Yearwood. It was Reba McEntire. It was Mary Chapin Carpenter, Patti Loveless, Kathy Mattea, Tanya Tucker, Lori Morgan, Martina McBride, Sarah Evans, Susie Boggess, Terry Clark. I mean, I could keep going. And there was room for all those ladies. So I think the reason we needed all those women was they were all pretty unique unto themselves. And maybe that's something to consider going forward.
We're talking to Holly Gleason about her new book, Woman Walk the Line, here on Hillbilly Solid. I'm your host, Silas House, and this is WUKY 91.3. Well, you mentioned writing as a 14-year-old girl, so can you tell us a little bit about how you broke into this industry at such a young age? I mean, how did all that happen?
Well, I was a championship golfer. I got hurt. I was lamenting the fact that I was probably going to have to redshirt my freshman year of college, and I was playing golf with the lead singer of Pure Prairie League, who said, you know, I had interviewed him for my high school paper. And he said, I don't know, I think you're a pretty good interviewer. You should think about being a music writer. And I said, I'm 17 years old. And he said, well, there's Cameron Crowe, right? It worked for him. Cameron, of course, had written Fast Times at Ridgemont High about going back to high school as a 23 or 24-year-old. And he had been writing for Rolling Stone when he was 16 and 17. So I always joke, it's the only fight Vince Gill ever won with me. And then, you know, you just start writing. And I was fortunate. There were a lot of magazines when I was a kid. I wrote for Country Song Roundup. I wrote for Rock and Soul. I wrote for Trouser Press. So that would be country, urban music, and punk. I wrote for the Cleveland Plain Dealer. I wrote for the Miami Herald. I wrote for Tower Records Pulse Magazine, which was a pretty successful record store chain. I wrote for anybody who'd let me write. And you just keep building. And by the time I was 24, I was writing for the LA Times and Rolling Stone. Back then, I was a 24-year-old girl, the only woman writer they had other than Sheila Rogers, who did Random Notes. And I was a kid among all these grown-ups. It was very intimidating.
So how has the world of country music changed during your time within it? I mean, pretty much your whole life, your whole adult life, you've been involved in it. So how have you seen it change for better and for worse?
When I started writing, it was two very definite lanes. There was the mainstream stuff, and there was the other stuff. And the other stuff would have included Ricky Skaggs, Emmylou, Willie Nelson, you know, artists that were artists. And they followed their own path versus they chased what worked on radio. And you could have overlap. I think Ronnie Millsap was probably both. Dolly was probably both during that era. And then when Randy Travis happened, things got very traditional. And it was Reba's My Kind of Country, and it was George Strait, and Dwight Yoakam happened. And Dwight Yoakam and Steve Earle kind of brought us to the credibility scare. It also gave you Lyle Lovett, Katie Lang, ironically Patti Loveless. And that was a really nice, interesting track. And out of that came Alan Jackson, Vince Gill, Clint Black. And Clint Black had a horse that would run neck and neck with him in Garth Brooks. Garth Brooks changed everything. Suddenly, people knew you could sell great deals of records. Mm-hmm. It got very focused on how big can it be. And I think it got harder to be an outlier. And everything we've seen in the wake of that has sort of been moving towards the how big can it be and how do we pull in a large audience. And now I think it's pretty, you know, it's pretty homogenized. And what's to me sad is when you listen to a country radio station, you have to listen until you recognize something because it could be the CHR station. You know, there's not a lot of country signifiers. Even when Shania Twain was working with Mutt Lange, the big rock and roll producer, you know, Def Leppard and Bryan Adams, they still understood, put the steel, put the fiddle, put the mandolin, big and front and center.
A lot of people I know nowadays, they listen to a lot of country music, but it may not be the country music that's on the radio, right?
Yeah, the underground country.
Right. So tell us who you're excited about, what female singer that you're excited about, who we would hear on country radio, and the ones that we're not hearing.
Ooh, I really liked the Maddie and Tay Girl in a Country Song.
Mm-hmm.
You know, kind of, that's so right up the middle, there's no way you can deny it, and it says something, and you don't see country music saying much anymore. But then I like some of the girls that are trying to get on country radio, and maybe they get a one-off, and then they get shut down. I thought Cam and Burning House was great. Mm-hmm. I thought Carly Pierce, who has a song going up the chart right now, it's a really good song. You know, I like a lot of what Leanne Womack does, which, you know, I Hope You Dance didn't get any bigger, but she's got a record coming. It'll be interesting to see if they can build on all that was done with The Way I'm Living. But, you know, there's so much great country that's not on the radio. Mm-hmm. That's sort of the irony is you've got Aubrey Sellers, who they're trying to figure out how to make work, Ashley McBride, who's pretty close. I think she could actually pop through. Brandi Clark, who's another one. Why isn't she on country radio? Angelina Presley, Margot Price, one of my other contributors, Candia Crazy Horse, who's a Native American who makes really hardcore country, and she's just terrific. You know, and then there's the more folk stuff like Iris DeMent, like Patty Griffin, like Amanda Shires.
Well, the book has been getting such great buzz. NPR has lauded it. People and Billboard magazines both did features on it. The blurbs are pretty amazing. And then today, just before we went on the air, I found out that the book is being featured in the Washington Post and the New York Times on the same day. You want to react to that?
Well, you see what happens. I was at a meeting when I got the New York Times news from a friend who was on vacation in Italy, and I started screaming. I think they thought I had been taken over by the spirit. And I got the news about the Washington Post while I was driving to my next meeting. It's crazy. This stuff doesn't happen. You know, and there were a lot of people that told me, you know, anthologies don't sell, and women writing about women, nobody cares. And I kept saying, no, I know this is right. I know this is right. It's something that needs to be said. And Amazon sold out of their initial shipment, I would say, 3 days, maybe 4 days after we were officially released, because I believe these are real-life fairy tales. These things all actually happened, and there's some very tough things in the book. We have a woman who saw the Twin Towers fall on 9/11, and that set in motion this running for her life that was resolved through Patty Griffin's music. Wow. We have Allie Burlow, who lost her mentor suddenly on a plane back to Africa. Emmy Lou is able to puncture her sorrow and get her back to functioning. You know, so they're not all, gee, I interviewed a country star and now I'm a real girl.
Right.
Aw shucks stories. Even the Dolly Parton, which comes from Access Hollywood's Nancy Harrison, you know, the first lesson for her was, as she calls herself, a Long Island teen in satin disco pants, was girls can write their own songs.
Mm-hmm.
And she grew up to be pretty big deal television producer. But then the other lesson, which I think is so feminist, the F word. You can be pretty, and you can keep your femininity. You can wear your makeup or your high heels or your silk shirts. Right? Because when she hit the workforce, there was a conventional wisdom that you dress like a man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't call too much attention to yourself. Don't be too sexy. Don't be too pretty. And, you know, for her, Dolly Parton drove a truck right through that.
Mm-hmm.
And the beautiful thing is, these are all happy endings. Unexpected, the Roseanne Cash, you know, her eulogy for her stepmom, June Carter Cash, was one of the most beautiful things about humanity and loving people I've ever heard. I was at the funeral when she gave it. And the essay about Roseanne comes from a Cleveland, Ohio kid, grew up poor working class. Mom wanted something better, saw to it that a college education was had, and they became an editor at a bunch of music magazines. I wrote one of my editors at Cream Magazine, and you think that's what the essay is about, the expectation of your family and your societal grounding, and then you find out that this writer was in the process of transitioning and had an encounter with Roseanne at their day job where she grabs his hand and says, "We're wearing the same color nail polish," and sits down next to him and proceeds to do her interview. And I think in that moment, Debbie understood it was okay to be Debbie and to not look back. I mean, it's a breathtaking essay. And, you know, because of this book, it got to be told.
Right. Well, there's so many stories in it, and it's so layered. And I hope everybody out there will get a copy. Congratulations on the book's success. We're really happy for you.
Thank you so much. And, you know, I think the thing is, no matter where you are in your life, you're going to find something that resonates for you. And it may be that you get turned on to some music that you didn't know you were going to like. I'm doing Spotify playlists. If you go to Holly Gleason on Spotify, look for all the playlists that say Woman Walk the Line. Music is medicine. Music heals. And if you let yourself surrender to it and really experience it, I think it can change your life.
I totally agree. Thanks so much for being here with us, Holly.
Thanks, honey. Take care.
You too.